But, welcome to Axe to Grind, long distance edition. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom, a.k.a. Babu Frick.
Yeah, I like your, you come in with these clever names into these, they're not Skype sessions, but they're from afar. You use an alias. Are you being monitored by police at all?
Yes, I am.
Oh, no shit. Do you think
FBI are after me.
Do you think your office is ever monitored because of your profession?
Yes, 100%.
No shit.
I know for a fact.
So fucking that's crooked out here.
ICE has shown up.
So
people come. Yeah, absolutely.
Does ICE show up to grill you guys or to drag people out?
To drag people out, but we protect the people that they're trying to drag out.
No shit.
Yeah, they've come.
Do you have any, as a person that works in that field, do you want to give any advice to potential listeners on their rights?
I mean, I don't want to talk about rights because that can get you in trouble, but I think if you are an American citizen, particularly one that is more on the Bob, Patrick, Tom scale of whiteness.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Use your fucking privilege to defend people that don't have that same ability to.
But what's that mean, though? Like, put my camera on so there's no mistreatment, or does that mean I jump in the way of an ICE agent?
I think it could be both.
No shit.
I mean, we've done that before in my office. I'm like, you're not coming in here.
But I guess what I'm used to dealing with cops who will just push me aside or tell me I'm under arrest. What jurisdiction? Like, what can an ICE agent do to me if I say, "Nah, I'm sorry, you're not welcome here"?
Come back with a fucking warrant.
Okay.
Where's the warrant?
Where's the warrant is always good advice.
I like
and,
that.
Tom brings up a good point. I said rights. People that know your rights or carry those cards that tell you about your rights, it only works if the police officer's camera is on. It's the only time your rights apply. And that's a sad fact, but don't get your head split open reciting your rights to people. And best of luck to everybody. Okay. We are at a distance. Where's everybody at? I'm at my mother's house in Albany, New York.
In my house.
In my apartment in Queens.
No shit. And how was everybody's holiday?
It's nice. Good.
How was yours?
Nothing to report here, huh?
Well, start with yours, Patrick. Then we'll slip.
Okay. On Christmas Eve, I had dinner with my aunt, my mother, and my sister. Realized that I don't like any of them.
Wow.
And no, I realized that people that interrupt each other and speak loudly, and I know that sounds like a high irony coming from me.
From us,
it was too much for me. So much so that the next day, when there was an actual family event, I said, you know, I'm gonna Insta live with my friends on the internet because going out into the real world where people talk at full volume is a bit much for me.
Well, so quick question for both of you: have you found that people from New York, New Jersey, you know, the Northeast, will interrupt each other and talk over each other more than other parts of the country, or is that just everybody?
No, I think that's more than just the Northeast.
Okay.
I think honestly, and this is, again, this is a rough thing to say coming from me who interrupts often. And when I am around truly educated people, and some of that is a class divide, I have to imagine, and nobody likes to talk about that, but
100%.
When people who are truly educated, they tend not to interrupt each other, and there's a thoughtfulness that seems to come off of their forehead as they're listening, and I would like to get there. However, it's not my natural orientation. And it is also, once you're in a habit, think it'd be hard to break out of.
Like, would we lose listeners if we didn't interrupt each other? If we figured out how to be smarter and to speak and to talk and then to catch the cues? At distance, it's very hard. In person, man, we have a hard time with it. But I think it makes it feel more natural. But maybe that's just because we're all, you know, mill brow.
It does make it sound more natural for sure. But the flip side is that there's actually less editing for me. So I appreciate interrupting because anytime that, like, I listen to a number of podcasts that are done via devices like Skype or the one that we're using right now. And unless everybody is trained for radio, for example, that is an awful lot of editing that just sucks. And so in person, it sounds natural and good. On here, it can be a bit of a pill. But I think in general, I like interrupting, but I've started to notice it in conversations or other podcasts, et cetera. I've started to notice when people interrupt.
I like interrupting the new Patrick Kinlan podcast.
Pardon the interruption.
Yeah, I don't care if this interrupts you.
Before we get into the rest of our holiday stories, because I want to hear about Tom's and your Instagram living, let's send a quick shout out to our sponsors, Run for Cover Records. Let's start there. You guys got anything? Because if you don't, I do.
I defer.
Yeah. All right.
We talked about, they had a pretty big 2019. I don't really know what they have going on in 2020, but I think we all were, would it be safe to say that we were all mildly to warm about their collection of releases in 2019?
100%.
Yeah, wasn't mad at it. The stuff that is, the stuff that's confusing for me, I still am interested in because I want to know. I want to know who loves that. You know what I'm saying? Like the stuff that I look at and I go, oh, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, who does it make sense to? In the same way that like not a Run for Cover band, but in the same way that Glitter to a lot of our listeners didn't make sense, but then we heard from the listeners that it did make sense to. And that shit is always interesting. So I'm kind of the Run for Cover. I won't call them oddities.
Unwrapping.
I'm certain that they sell more records than me. They're not odd, but like the stuff that I don't know, I'm curious.
Right. Right. I was going to play Foreigner. I want to know what love is. I want you to show me, but you know, so with that said, I'm going to go back in the hat. We recommend it a lot. It's my favorite record on Run for Cover from last year. It's the Barry's Berryland LP. I gave it to my sister for Christmas because she wanted some records. So I bought that. I was thinking about it. It might be a nice idea to suggest to people who like music or who are involved in the subculture world, etc. One present. Give one present that is music or whatever to your weird nephew, niece, uncle, aunt, brother, sister. Just one. It doesn't, and you know, I wasn't giving my sister the, you know, the Never Ending Game LP, but the Barry's LP, I think she's actually going to like. So go check out Berryland. Check out their new records. I'm curious about this Georgia Mac, I believe it's called Pleaser LP, that's just coming out. But if you go to runforcoverrecords.com, go to the web store, put some stuff in your cart. Tom, what's the code that you enter?
Axe to Grind.
And what do you do with that code?
You have to spell it out.
Mm, you get 15% on everything at the Run for Cover Records store.
15.
I know. Great for them. All right, guys. We got a couple other sponsors. I'll let one of you choose who we're going to shout out today.
So let's shout out Closed Casket, who has who got what it, scooped, as they say in the news business. They had a release coming that so
was secret.
This has happened to me in both comics and music. Everybody can find out everything because there's always a leak in the form of some overseas either Amazon affiliate sort of thing, or a, like store that goes through something that is getting this stuff auto loaded to them, and it goes up early in some way, or you can search the term in Amazon and find it that way. There's always some goddamn, like I found out that there was a kid who had all this self defense material that wasn't released. And he was going through, I don't even fucking know, but like you can always get scooped. And Closed Casket got scooped on an Acacia Strain record that they got coming out that was announced by the French before it was announced officially. So I got no idea what the hell the name of that is, but it is coming out. It is.
It Comes in Waves is the name of the record.
It Comes in Waves.
It Comes in Waves. You got
it. That's graphic. So it's Acacia Strain is not my thing, I should say, I guess. That said, they've been really good to Drug Church. And the dude in the band that I interact with is cool as shit. And it is a band that has significant crossover into hardcore in a way that I wasn't really aware of until relatively recently. But it is heavy enough that it really appeals. And there's people that really claim that Acacia Strain at one time were the heaviest band going. And if you ignored them, then it was, that's your bad.
I think they were an entry point for a lot of people.
That's true.
And absolutely. I think they're the one band of that ilk that you don't have to be embarrassed to still like.
That might be the thing. Maybe that's
like nobody's saying they like the Muir.
Nah, that's true. I mean,
they sold hundreds of thousands of records. One of you bought it. But I feel like because Vincent's like a hardcore dude at heart, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think people are less likely to be like embarrassed about liking, you know, or that being their entry point.
I find the band, I find the band pretty interesting in this respect. The music is serious, heavy, etc. The band itself doesn't take itself very seriously. And that is very appealing to me. But apparently it's appealing for their fans because they got a lot of loyal fans. But I've always found it to be one of those dividing lines where there's people that need everything to be deathly serious, and then there's people who are able to realize that all of life is a joke. Fuck it. And
they fall in the latter category.
They really do. So like they've got a music video that is like so goofy that it's appalling. But to their fans, that makes total fucking sense.
Yeah. And you need a merch.
I think it was Portland. I did like 6 minutes, like it was a stand up bit of just listing fucking Acacia Strain shirts.
I mean, the guts that they have to put out some of those shirts, people buy them. But I guess not like a straight, like, this is an Acacia Strain. Like, there's nothing, I don't think they have a shirt out there that's just like everything's like a wrestling shirt.
Check this out. When I was talking about this on stage, people were just yelling what they, I said, what's the classic Acacia Strain shirt? Like, what's the one everybody knows? And people were yelling the Call of Duty, Pickle Rick, you know what I mean? Like Hannah Montana, like all those ones that like, because Bob, I don't know if you're aware of this. They basically, they'll sell shirts so fast and their fans are so with it. That they'll just be like, oh, is there something topical? You know what I mean?
Like, and they'll just put their name on it.
Yeah.
Like, they don't change it. It's like a picture of Hannah Montana, and it's just like the Acacia Strain.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
it's brilliant. It's funny.
The more I think of it, the funnier it is. But, like, here's the thing. So, like, some of those, like, noise, like the stuff that would have been on AMRAP fucking 15 years ago and is now just kind of floating in the ether on smaller labels, don't know who to tie it to. A lot of that stuff would do well in hardcore, I think, except it's self-effacing and it makes fun. It can laugh. And right. And that's alienating to a lot of hardcore kids. And maybe not the Shore. I got to give credit, actually has a better sense of humor. But
yeah.
But Acacia Strain fault. Acacia Strain, not noisecore, but like whatever that shit is, like fucking proto deathcore, heavy, whatever the fuck that is.
What do you want to label it? Right.
Those kids like to laugh. You know what I mean? So I can't. Yeah, I can't knock that. So everybody check it out. Somebody told me that the last Acacia Strain record was what some fans really wanted. So after they, I guess, you know how this always goes. When you got a long career, you have your record that's like a little too traditionally metal, and then people step off because that's not what they came to you for. And then you do the record that's more in the vein of what people love you for, whatever. I think talking to Closed Casket CEO / CFO, he's a C-level executive over there, this is what people are going to want. So if you're an Acacia Strain fan, this was my long spiel. Check it out.
Check it out. Go to closedcasketactivities.com. Enter the promo code.
Axe to Grind.
Tom, spell it out for us.
AXETOGRIND.
Thank you. Not so bad. Much. Look at that. Tom, how was your Christmas? Did you do anything nice?
Well, someone asked me, like, did you do anything good? I'm like, I went to Jersey.
So I pivoted from good to nice, you know, because spending time with family can be nice. So
yeah, it was nice. Yeah. the placement of the holiday in the middle of the week kind of sucked.
Mm.
Like I had to be back to work the next day, which is kind of painful. But yeah, it was really nice. It was cool. I got to see all my family. No. We got to do some wild shit. It was fun.
Nice.
We did hood rat things with my mom. How about you?
It was good. Christmas Eve was the, let's see, family type thing this year, thankfully. Because then Christmas Day, we did what is, I think, the way to spend it, which is just being at home. And it was just me and Amanda and Easton. Easton is 6 years old. He opened all his presents and then got to play with them all day. And we just kind of hung out, which was
That's just the move.
Yeah, I think it's the
move.
Remember
as a kid, like you'd open your stuff and you'd be like, all right, now we're going to your aunt's house. It's like, fuck, I just opened
it. Sucks. And so the opportunity to do it the right way, really, really nice. So, pretty. And then today's kind of been a continuation of that. Tom, I feel for you because you have a serious job that is important and good for people. And it's telling because you had to be back at work today. Many people who have the less important or like cube jobs, or you know, maybe they screen print or whatever.
Or they work in entertainment.
Right. Yes. Right.
They're closed until after the New Year.
Yes. Correct. So they get the week off. So the midweek break, it's like cool. But we're gonna have off Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. They're not going to make us work Monday and then have off the rest of the week. So they'll just give us basically a 10-day vacation. And we'll come back next Thursday, you know?
Yeah,
not bad. So, yeah, not too bad. Pat, what about you? You got did the chalk factory give you some time off or?
the typewriter assembly plant gave me a full 12 hours off the line.
Do you get a good gift for Christmas this year?
I got exactly two gifts. Mm-hmm. I got a pair of Adidas shower shoes, or what the kids call slides.
Slides, yes.
I'd never really heard that before this year. I don't know.
Stop, if that's dude. I've been calling them slides for 20 years.
Yeah, but to me, they're hideous things that I don't wear. Like, I think that's a goofy apparel. I don't like it. So I have no real contact. That would be like talking to me about, like, is there slang for Crocs? I don't know. But, I got that and then antifungal body wash because apparently what this was all about keeping I've been going to the YMCA and this is all about keeping me not bringing back fungal infections to my mother's house. So
you can get yourself clean. You can have a good meal. You can do whatever you feel.
Yeah, wow, precisely. Like a, it's like a Bing Crosby, like you're having utilitarian Christmas.
I took a photo and put it on Instagram, and people no comment or anything, and people were just hitting me with "It's a Christmas miracle." It's very funny. But
don't bring back athlete's foot. That was pretty much your Christmas gift.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so, to anybody who's like maybe 17 and just heard what I said and found it very depressing, let me just give you like a little idea of where you're going to be when you're 130 like me. That's an awesome set of gifts.
Yeah, I wasn't anything I got. I got all adult stuff.
Yeah, I was very excited that I didn't have to pay for, I'm going to say it, slides.
There you go.
Oh, man. Wow.
What about that other? Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was speaking more of a less tangible, fungible gift that you were given, but I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Was I given? Do I have an STD? What's going on?
The gift you got today. The gift you got today.
Oh. Yeah.
We have people who are invested.
That's the only reason why I'm bringing
that. For sure. So to those that are have been well wishing or supportive of the fact that my father's parole was coming up, got news today, which I don't know when the idea of keeping somebody in the dark over Christmas, I guess only makes sense because he was one of a few guys that went up for parole, and imagine being denied parole. Right before Christmas, probably spikes suicide rates, et cetera. So they didn't tell him and over Christmas, which I thought was a little inhumane, but then I started thinking about the guy that might've gotten denied.
Right.
My father was not denied. He was granted parole and, will be seeing the outside, in April, God willing.
Let's put them, if we have sound effects, use them now. Like, yay. You know?
Yeah. Cheers. That's very exciting. I look forward, I should be back. Should I be back by April? Yes. So I'll be, I look forward to chilling with him. He just wants to watch.
Perfect.
He's a simple guy. He just wants to follow, like, probably looking forward to pitchers and catchers.
Yeah, you know what? Let's find out when he's going to be out, and we'll get him tickets to a Yankees game.
Oh, that's nice. Hawaiian bread or Hawaiian rolls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so thank you to those of you that have written me with nice comment. Appreciate your support.
So Frank will be on in May.
Yeah, we'll have him as a guest. He won't know.
What am I talking into this? What is this, on the radio?
He has, because podcasts are so popular, he has asked me like for guys incarcerated. So what does this guy need? He's talking about doing a podcast.
Oh, wow.
I was like, yeah. Maybe you guys can listen to, the Double Murderer podcast.
I mean, there's a podcast that's done, in some like maximum security prison in Colorado, I want to say.
Okay.
All by
love.
Oh. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They pull it off. Like,
I'm sorry?
They're able to pull it off. They're able to record a podcast in prison.
I forget what it's. Yeah. I mean, it's all legit. It's Fuck. It's on. I can't remember what podcasting, like. Whatever. Like WNYC, one of those like
one of the NPR stations. Yeah.
Not Stereo Lab. What the fuck is the other thing?
Yes, something lab.
People yelling at us right now.
Yeah, they are. Okay. You guys got switches and fungal shampoo as well?
I got a switch for Easton. So far, so good. He enjoys it. If you want the real story, we didn't do a ton of screens or like that kind of stuff when he was young. So we do a little bit more now, and he doesn't watch a ton of TV. He watches TV, but not all the time. There are 6-year olds who watch TV all the time, and I'm glad he's not one of them. But we got him. He was actually, and I say this because I hope it reveals like how different people can be. He was almost shy to ask for it. He really wanted it, but he's also so not used to playing video games, he's nervous about it. So it's been nice. He really likes it. So we've played it a little bit so far, and I think he's getting the hang of it.
How much have you played it at night?
So far, none. But you know, I got four games. I got Pokemon game that's just for him. Mario Kart. You know, everybody can enjoy Mario Kart. Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe or something, which side-scrolling Mario. That's for him, but also, you know, I'll play that. And then Zelda Breath of the Wild, which, you know, like, that's for him, but I think I'll probably end up manning the controls on that one. A good amount.
You got to get an NBA 2K, like, for, after, you know, after 9 o'clock play.
Oh, please believe that one's for the PS4, though. So, yeah, I'm going to get that one. you guys want to talk about hardcore?
Let's do it.
Sure.
I mean, I'm like halfway. We might as well just do all Christmas talk, to be honest. So we're going to do a little thing. Let's do this. We don't got quick hits. We probably got quick hits, but let's skip quick hits and do a new thing called One Thing, which is where we discuss one thing that we've listened to in the past week or just recently. It could be new. It could be old. And give it a little shine, a little attention, and some thoughts on it, be it good, bad, or indifferent, whatever it happens to be. And, you know, we discussed this a little before, but do one of you guys want to go?
I've been listening to both records by DaBaby.
DaBaby.
They're great.
Yeah, people love DaBaby. I liked the one video where he was like...
The FedEx guy?
No, that's a good video. That's a good. No, he was like fixing something the whole time. I like the song.
It's you know what? Like, I'm a little older, and a lot of the newer rap misses me.
Yeah.
Just because I'm used to, like, fucking, you know, Wu-Tang, and not, you know, people. I mean, it's pretty much dudes singing to over, like, auto tune. It's not great,
right?
But the female rappers today are a lot better. Like Megan Thee Stallion, fucking, you know, whatever. But this, he put out two LPs in a year.
Respect.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
And he's like, you know, super clever. You know, it's like a fun listen. And that's kind of what I was looking for in, you know, in these trying times of the holidays.
DaBaby met your holiday needs.
So he really did.
I see a lot of women saying, DaBaby, please have, you know, give me a baby. But what musically, is it more of a modern feel, or is it more kind of throwback, kind of like a harder
edge? It's kind of like, I mean, throwback to, like, if T.I. is a throwback.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I'm with T.I.
Or I'm going to go one step further and say that if you enjoy some Nelly party jams, you could definitely like DaBaby.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, he's pretty much like, there's a song, like one of his hit songs, like the chorus is like, don't let me take a picture with your wife because I'm the type of kid that fucks the babysitter.
I like that. Okay.
Super funny. And now, well, women before kind of, you know, loved him because, you know, he's a good looking dude, whatever.
Good smile, good body.
Nudes got leaked.
Oh.
And people were like legitimately freaking out about it. So I think he's even.
I saw the photo.
Oh.
I like it. Now, I've never sat on a big, big penis like that, but I'm going to say that as a visual thing.
Looks
as
good.
A visual thing.
It can't be fun.
Well, I like, I don't know. I like a cartoonish penis where the head is sized appropriately.
Bald,
but when you're as big as DaBaby, the head almost looks kind of small because you're long and you're thick and all that. And the head almost looks kind of small. Now, you know, these are small. These are very minor gripes, I should say. I'm sure it's a good dong, but this is just if I had to critique it. But yeah, look, I mean, it's menacing. It's a real contender.
So,
and he's a little dude, so it must just look like.
Oh God, got to it. No exaggeration. if he's as tall as I suspect he is,
probably about 5'6". If I
guess, he looks short. I've seen the videos; he looks short.
Yeah, so that so it's not touching his knee, but it's mid thigh, I would guess.
Mm. Good on him. So Tom is saying DaBaby, good music. Pat is saying DaBaby, good dick.
That's what I'm saying.
And you know, it's a little bit of something for everybody.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Not at all. PK, what you got?
Okay, so we don't want this to be my own unreleased music, right? That would be a cheat. So
no, we're not going to go from DaBaby dick talk to your own masturbatory conversation. Yeah.
So instead, I'll say the choke bore record, Anything Near Water, which is I want to say 1995. It's a lot of music. I think some of our listeners are choke bore fans, but largely a forgotten kind of noisier act. Mm-hmm. The way I would put it is if Unsane and Jawbox were a band. So You're getting that kind of like aggressive ugliness, but you're also getting some of that kind of highly likable.
Tuneful.
You know.
Are we talking handsome?
Yeah, like the rhythmic stuff that. No, it's maybe not as. So handsome, let's just be square. Sorry to members of Handsome that listen. Handsome is good quicksand stand-in. Is that fair?
Sure.
Doesn't mean that they don't got tracks, but it just means
tracks.
Yeah, they got a couple tracks. It just means
standing in for quicksand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no disrespect. This is not that. But there are some quicksandish sort of moments, but I would say honestly, maybe instead of saying Unsane meets Jawbox, Unsane meets the Discord catalog of that era. It makes for this really fun, not wholly unpleasant mix.
Very good. All right. And I was revisiting some stuff from more recent times, and I actually ordered the Enforced at the Walls LP and got it a while back. Shout out to War Records. And I was listening to it, and I really, really like that band. I think that
I fumbled that by not putting that on my top list.
Oh, it's a great record.
It's really good.
Yeah. And on re-listening, it's metallic. It's got it's got a lot of hardcore. It's not, you know, when I listen to them, because in my head, I'm like, oh, this is crossover, but it's got a lot of integrity. As Amanda said, when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, so you don't hate this. And she's like, no, I like it because it sounds like Hatebreed, and I like Hatebreed. And, I just hadn't thought of that because it does have some moshy stuff. And I wouldn't have made the Hatebreed comparison, but I thought that was a cool insight. And I don't know, I was listening to it on a deeper way and thinking, you know, this could play alongside stuff on a heavier side, on mosh side, on the more metal side. Obviously they've done that a bit. So I'm very curious to see it. And I hope more and more people, I think people are catching on to it, but I was really excited on my re-listens that it's holding up so well.
Yeah. And they're doing that tour with Red Death.
Yep. Well, they share a bunch of members. So that's kind of a cool thing. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So looking forward to what they got going on this year. But yeah, one thing, we're going to do this because our goal for 2020 is, There's going to be a lot more music, and you're going to always get more music from us, but more deeper looks at music, not just more music, more, not just quantity, but quality here. So
we're Marie Kondoing it.
Yes. There we go. Thank you for your service, desk chair. I'm getting you're out of here. Okay. How do you guys feel about cleaning out the mailbag a little bit? The mailbag. Like the baby.
It's a mailbag. Let's hit it.
All right. Going way back. Hey, guys. was looking through my records tonight and came across a few splits that I hadn't listened to in a while. This got me to think about split releases in general. So I have a few questions for you guys about splits. Do you guys think splits are important today's hardcore scene or just something for collectors? Were splits ever an incredibly popular or important thing? What are some of your favorite splits? And then somewhat related, how do you guys feel about split releases on labels? Love the podcast. Thanks for all the hours invested. Much love from Cleveland, Vladimir. Thanks, Vladimir. So what do you guys think? Splits, are they important in today's hardcore scene or just something for collectors?
I think they could be important just because if I like the band, you know, the band on side A, but I've never heard the band on side B, mm-hmm. you may give it a shot.
Incendiary did a good job with this early in their career with a series of splits that I think exposed people who already liked Incendiary to the bands on the split. And then for their B side or A side counterpart, helped expose Incendiary to them, you know? So it's, that's a good example of a way it can be important. I would say that they're not just for collectors. Are they important, speaking plainly? Maybe not, but they can be a way to expose people. You know, you can use that as a way to get out to a totally different audience if you just kind of have a limited range. PK, what do you think?
I think some scenes are still married to them, like Screamo still likes them a lot. I think at one time they were rather important and are no longer at all. That doesn't mean that they're not worth doing. I think that they're cool. And I think that there's a way to make them, germane. I don't think anybody's going to find a new band because while vinyl sells through for a lot of people still, it's not the primary way that people find things. And a lot of times if people are just searching for you, they're going to like on a digital streaming platform, they're going to just listen to you. They're not going to give it. So the way that I think that you could make the most of doing a split is just to hope for the best from two bands promoting one thing very hard at the same time.
Okay. Can I throw a thing out at you? Finish. I apologize.
And I think in that way, you can make a split totally meaningful in the respect that you have double the kind of attentive promotion to it. I just saw Porcupine is doing a split with Prounds. Now, I don't follow Prounds on social media, but let's say that I did. That would mean that Porcupine, a band that is pretty on it about promoting themselves, let's say that I followed both bands and then I followed a couple friends that are also about it. Basically what I'm saying is it could appear that this is just the record of the year that everybody's talking about because I'm getting so much of it in my feed.
Right.
And I think that's where it has value because if, let me actually just posit a question. Some of these records that only had one day in the sun this year, but are totally decent records or good records.
Right.
If they had been splits with both of those bands that only got one day in the sun apiece,
pushing
them, maybe it could have gone a week in the sun for both. And go on.
No, okay. I mean, I appreciate that point. I think that's a good point. I like the idea, because you're right, we're seeing lots of stuff that gets one day, 2 days, a 3 day span that they hit everybody's Instagram story, they hit all the social media feeds, talk, and then it's done. So maybe you squeeze the lemon and you get 2 days or you're hitting more timelines. What is a split release that came out last year that you can think of in hardcore? Let's use just hardcore. Hardcore and punk or hardcore adjacent, you know?
I'd have to think about it. In my head, the Florida bands did this, but I can't think of what
Okay, are you ready? So this is a good example because it's twofold, because it's not just, there's more than one reason I don't think it's coming to mind. There's a split put out by Maniac and Seat of Pain. Both bands who I think we collectively are fond of, definitely all aware of, and like at least one, if not both bands on that split, right?
Sure.
It was a split release and there was no physical. So I agree. I think it got out there, but it fizzled really quick. Tom.
Huh?
No, I thought you were going to say something. I apologize.
No, I said, was it really a split release?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, so that's the thing, right? Because the idea, okay, so you did a split release, but there's no split, you know, there's no physical to make it like, hey, this
you just
is
moving files to another person, you know, like,
exactly. It's a collective single, right? And it's the lack of there being that tangible thing that exists where, hey, here's the Maniac stuff and here's the Seat of Pain stuff. And those are two bands I actually like. I really like Seat of Pain, and I like Maniac enough. And I'm more excited to see what Maniac does next. Like, that's what I took of the Maniac release from last year, which I was like, oh, I want to see what this band does next. And the next thing they did was a split, and it essentially washed by me.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting to think about how can splits be positioned now and moving forward so that they're exciting or that they can grab some zeitgeist. I do agree. I think your point, Pat, was well made. The idea of trying to kind of, you know, instead of just being one dolphin, you've got two dolphins. You're in two player mode on Echo the Dolphin and putting the pings out there. So that's good. I think also the example of a band like Incendiary is perfect, that in the modern era, we know that people discovered Zabalba who were just Incendiary fans, and we know that there's people who discovered Incendiary who had previously been just Zabalba fans. So that's, you know, a cool idea. Were splits ever incredibly popular or important? I don't know that I would use the word incredibly popular or very important. But
I mean, the Faithless was one of the most famous splits, one of the most famous records in hardcore.
Absolutely. And I think, like, it's such a – important is a hard word. They were, much like compilations, another way to tangibly and intangibly get yourself out there to people who maybe wouldn't have discovered you if you were just on your own, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So were they ever incredibly popular? Well, Faith Void, super popular. I can't think of many other splits that were super, super – that are given like classic status. But I think that they're certainly – I mean, the reason End of Year got signed was because of their split with 315. Just so happened that you put a good song on there. Tom, I can't tell you how many copies of the Indecision Shutdown split I've seen in my life. You know what I mean?
Hopefully
so many. Well, used and new. There's just a lot of them. They're out there. So, you know.
You mean Rick Light didn't do just one pressing?
Just one pressing, just one cover. You know, man.
Right. Yeah, of course. No color variations or anything.
Nah, man, nah. Man used there as a placeholder for the word he would have used, really.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank God.
What are some of your favorites? Oh, go ahead, Pat.
Some of our favorites. I'd have to really fucking think about this. Cause now with everything being an MP3 on my phone, I couldn't tell you. Splits I've owned over the years. Damn. I'm looking at one that's, I don't own it, but it was a topic of conversation the other day. Rent America Polestar split. This came up in a live stream because we've talked about Rent America on this podcast, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that screamed about the worms, you know?
Oh, right. Okay.
So famous story, everybody. I thought it was more than Music Fest, but somebody that might not even be true. It's the screamo band that, like, people use it as an example of how hysterical the 90s were. that this band was not about veganism, but was on crying on stage about worms that are stepped on or run over after it rains.
Right.
So now, was that a parody? I don't think so. That those guys went on to be in Face Down and Shit, I guess. Anyway, that's a screamo band. That's a screamo split. And I still see the screamo labels that I follow on social media still seemed committed to the split release. So I don't know. I'd have to really think about my favorite splits. The first one I ever owned was the Hatebreed split with
Neglect.
Neglect. Yes. Yes. I can see the cover in my mind now. So was that classic? I don't know if I'd call it classic, but it made an impression.
Yeah. For me, I like the 10 Yard Fight Fast Break split, mostly for the fast break material. Would I call it classic? Definitely not. That's crazy. Faith Void is classic. I do like it. I like both sides. It gets a lot of talk. I'm racking my brain for other big ones because it's not like there weren't that many big time New York hardcore band splits, you know, at least in the golden age and even into the 90s. Like there were some through the 90s, bands started doing more of them. And then AF did a bunch late in their career. Murphy's Law did a few. There were, other than Faith Void, there were no DC splits. I mean, don't talk to me about the Mission Impossible lunch meat split.
I wasn't gonna.
Oh, good. Thanks. I liked them when I was young. You know what I mean? And I think that's the mentality you should put on a little bit, is the idea of discovering bands from them was cool. It was neat to do that. What's the classic? Infest PHC. Like, but can I remember any of the PHC side?
No,
man, none. So that was the other problem with splits, was that if one band brought it and the other band just didn't.
For sure. Yeah.
Tom?
Wasn't on your, you know, one of my favorite splits is the Poacher Diaries, and because it's got two of the best conversions. You know, it's got two of the best converged songs, excuse me. And
you've never heard an agoraphobic
nosebleed is on the other side, right? Yeah. Okay, so you know what?
That side. Never played.
Yeah, zero spins.
The Death Wish Dead Man's Hand series, they were doing a cool thing with that. Indecision Record.
Suicide File Hope Con.
Yep, Suicide File Hope Con. Blacklisted. Who is the split Blacklisted did with? Terror? No. First Blood. That's right.
The Incendiary Suburban Scum split is good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, I know on the face of it, this is not going to be a topic that you want to tackle necessarily. I would like to, at some point, try to understand First Blood. I'd like to have a deep dive on First Blood insofar as a deep dive can be done.
I think we should do some weirdo far left of field deep dives. We're going to do Paint It Black this year. We'll do First Blood too. Why the fuck not?
First Blood is so confusing. All right. So
The Formation of Rise Victim split is really fucking good. Maybe the best material from Victim. So really good. There's some good stuff out there. What's that? Spaz. Yeah. Spaz 25 to Life, right?
Spaz 25 to Life. I have a Monster X split with somebody.
Monster X Devoid of Faith, no?
Yes.
The further you go into like the crustier side, the more likely you are to get good stuff. So the Tear It Up ETA split's pretty good. Somewhat related, how do you guys feel about split label releases? All right, we'll move right to that. Split label releases. So when, you know, for example, the Free Spirit, Free Yourself 7-inch was released on Lockin' Out and Triple B. The Fiddlehead, Springtime and Blind was a Lockin' Out and Run for Cover split. Blind Justice LP with Flat Spot and Edgewood. How do you feel about split releases on labels?
I think it's too many cooks.
Strongly.
Bob has always been on record as not a fan. I know this from when Bob was my man at Revelation. I personally don't have any problem with it. I understand where all these things could be a problem. Putting a record out doesn't need to be rocket science. You'd think that a couple dudes could pool their fucking $1,500 together and put out a good record without any hassle. I guess the problem would become if somebody hoped to see a return. And in our current space, I don't see any way that labels could make their money back doing split release format. I would see it as only a method of harm reduction to their pockets. I wouldn't see it as I wouldn't see it as a viable business decision necessarily.
Yeah, Collapse Record dealt almost exclusively in split label releases for a while because I was broke, but still liked good music. And so, as someone who's against them, it can be too many cooks in the kitchen. It can be a pain in the ass. And you know what? The only, especially in 2020, the person, the entity that loses the most is the band usually, because you just don't, you also are the, you know, you're no, nobody's number one. You're at best, you're a half, and that sucks.
Mm. Right. And there's too many, there's too much of a diffusion of responsibility. Yes. And it's never going to be a 50-50 split.
Vigorously shaking my head in agreement. Very, very well put. So splits, maybe we'll talk about it more, but send in your favorite splits. It's probably some good ones we're completely blanking on.
Yeah, I'd be curious about the ones that are totally slipping.
Warzone Quest for Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably a lot of splits by Lost and Found.
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
Where they basically just took good songs and were like, oh, we're going to put these three songs on this side with this band's other good three songs. Split.
Right, Ignite and Exacto.
Right. okay, let's move forward. We got a quick non-core one to break it up. Dave asks, rank fries, as in French fries, or freedom fries, depending on what part of the country you're from. Regular, like a McDonald's type fry. Shoestring, curly, steak, or waffle fries. So we have regular, like McDonald's, regular, shoestring, curly, steak, waffle.
Curly, waffle, steak, shoestring, McDonald's.
Okay.
Wow.
I like that. PK.
I'm going to go surprise, regular.
Boring.
Followed by curly.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by what else? A waffle.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by shoestring.
And then you're putting steak at the bottom.
I'm putting steak at the bottom. That's just a potato, my G. That's not not a fry.
No, you're getting a bad steak. If you get a good steak fry, oof. All right. I will go curly, good steak, shoestring, waffle, I'll go regular waffle. Because if you get the floor on bad waffle fries is really low. If you get bad waffle fry, that thing's, it's like eating toasted cardboard. No thanks. Need a lot of ketchup for that. Good question. All right. Let's go to the next. Guys, I organized the questions today for this. Be real ready. This is a real deep one. Tommy asks, getting right to the mailbag cues. Reign Supreme. Given their ties to and the pod's reverence for Blacklisted, I was wondering if you all got any stories or thoughts surrounding Reign Supreme. Oh, yeah. Personally, they were a gateway band into the Death Wish world that I think have a track or two, Iscariot. I believe Jay has spoken before about taking pride in being a gateway band, which is awesome. but they also had an air of violence and mystery surrounding them that held them back from fully achieving mass gateway status. Also, probably too concentrated on their streetwear aesthetic than the substance of their songs. Hmm. Okay, Reign Supreme. What do you guys, you got thoughts?
I dug them. I think Jay had a sick voice. I feel like as good as it was, as great as it was, or as good as it was, it didn't stick as much as I would hope. You know what I mean? Like, I could listen to a full record and be like, that was really cool. But if you name, if I had to, like, if you were like, name three parts, I don't know if I could.
Yeah, that dude nailed it with Iscariot being perhaps the banger. This I've gotten yelled at a lot because I have a Syrian hot take.
You said Syrian. I was like, what is that?
I have a Syrian hot take. And this is why I get yelled at, because it's a very political position I have.
Let me tell you about Reign Supreme and Syria. Here we go.
A very controversial show. People were like, is it right that they're playing for this vicious warlord, Assad? I think in their prime, Reign Supreme was one of the best live acts of the moment. I think that they, everybody that accused them of being hate breed or like a hate breed style. Okay. So let's get into this real quick. Bob, you are coming in a little loud. I'm just, looking at you.
I'm going to talk a little quieter.
Okay. Here's the thing in my view. I know that there's a lot of affection at this moment with FYA around the corner. I saw a lot of energy around the Moshcore show that the pre-show on that, right? Yeah. So I think it's on Broken Wings, Black My Heart, all the stuff that people called kind of in the hate. Like at the time, people were calling that hate breed music, right? Does everybody remember this? Everybody was saying, it's just hate breed. I don't think that's entirely accurate. I think if you go back, if you go back and listen to that, it was its own genre and it wasn't Hatebreed.
No, it was just moshy and people didn't know what the hell to call it.
Exactly.
Throwdown was Hatebreed.
Reign Supreme is coming much closer to Hatebreed than any of that music ever did.
And I think that
Reign Supreme ultimately doesn't have enough tracks you could make a really cool EP out of their best material, but ultimately doesn't have tracks. However, in their prime, they were a fucking great live act, and I enjoyed seeing them a lot. Weirdly, Self-Defense, maybe at that time, End of a Year, played with them on more than one occasion.
Wait, say that again.
So Self-Defense actually ended up playing with Reign Supreme. I wouldn't say often, but more often than you would ever think, given how different our sounds are. So I saw them a number of times and, enjoyed them. I would not call myself a fan in the traditional sense, but I got a lingering respect. So for anybody curious why Tom's being so quiet, he was temporarily booted. I'm going to get him back on.
Oh, you're getting him back in? Okay.
I'm going to get him back on while Bob does a little talking.
So for the background, I think the Reign Supreme material I've heard ranges from good to not my thing, but highly competent. And I haven't heard all the records, but the early EP, I think it's, what is the first EP called, Patrick? Do you remember? Are you there?
I am here.
Something Violent.
Is it not self-titled? Hold on.
It's Something Violence.
Oh.
I'll pull it up while you do this. I enjoyed their early material, and it was as if they could have been the biggest band in hardcore in the, like, you know, more straightforward world, the world of bands who would play This Is Hardcore, Sound and Fury, etc. They live really put on. I'll also preface this by saying I've known Jay since the late 90s. He's originally from the town just south of where I grew up, which is really cool. And yeah, like he was a good friend, and he did bands back then that were cool. He did a band called Inside Fight. He did a band called Rise Above. He did a band after that called A Thin Line Fading. And then he went on to Blacklisted. And there was, I think he was in a band in between those as well, a couple. But he really, you know, was a talented dude. And when Reign Supreme started, it just seemed like they had a lot of momentum and could go anywhere with it. And I don't know. I wonder about the direction that they went and if people were on board for it. But they had such an, you know, what the dude emailing, so Tommy, what you were saying about an air of violence and mystery. I wonder if anyone who knows those dudes, like Pat, you know them enough. Would you call any of them violent dudes?
Not at all. Right. What's interesting about the, like Jay is if, like he's worked on his body quite a bit. He's kind
big
of
dude,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Really put the work in. He's like a personal trainer sort of dude. But, and that can be, I guess, like have a vibe to it, like a hyper masculinity sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, those aren't those dudes really.
No,
like those
all.
Are like, those are like almost gentle guys.
Yeah. So, and, but at the same time, someone from the outside saying they had an air of violence and mystery. I don't know that I would totally disagree. But it's hard because knowing them, like they're thoughtful guys. I think that kind of came through with the recordings, and you know, so they are an interesting band, and we should actually talk about them a little more because they do have some really fascinating stories.
So,
Reign Sup.
Interesting thing about Reign Supreme. And I guess this is where it goes with bands that don't necessarily have tracks. That band was a shirt band. That band was visible, highly visible. And then when they stopped playing, it kind of all went away. And you could say the same thing for something like Outbreak. You know, like you could say the same thing for a lot of acts that Mongoloids to an extent. Yep. Things that were super, super fucking fun live. Yep. And then... the people aren't bumping it, but I should say that all those bands should still keep a web store because eventually you're going to fucking, people are going to think about the fun that they had at your fucking shows and buy your shit again.
True.
Yeah. No, I think that's the crime of the merch band. When the shirt comes first before the music, when you stop playing and people stop having a fun time at shows, they got nothing to live. They got nothing to buy the shirt for. So you're really running on nostalgia at that point. Reign Supreme, they're interesting. There's probably a bunch more stories and information. I feel like when they pivoted, they turned into a different scene that was much larger and never quite found footing there. Is that safe to say? Is that fair to say?
I don't think it's just fair. I think it's highly accurate.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, and I don't think they regret what they did. And I think that's kind of the credit to them because I think they always knew they were going to be an odd fit wherever they were. And they were kind of okay with that. And I think they kind of embraced that too. So,
yeah. Jay is such an interesting fella in music because, as you said, he was doing different bands for so long.
Yes.
Blacklisted. So if you like the early, like the earliest of Blacklisted material, you like Jay's writing, you know what I mean? And Jay can write a fucking hard song.
Yeah. We should mention the band he's in now.
Oh, right. It's with the, Counterparts kid, I think. Right.
Yeah. And Will, Putney, I believe.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The band is called End. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay plays bass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and Tom, did I misread that, or is Jay doing vocals for Shai Hulud on their Euro tour?
He's doing it in Euro and Furnace Fest.
Oh God, big episode. We got to talk about Furnace Fest, man. Bob, it's going to be fucking torture for you, but we got it. Like, as the shit gets announced, it gets crazier and crazier.
Really?
I'm sure Tom will confirm.
I'm waiting for the band that's going to fill a fucking place that like Fugazi used to play.
Okay. Yeah, right. Tom, I've got a suspect. It's the nostalgia monster is going to fill that fucking space because they are getting every band that actually used to play it, which is absolutely such a weird strategy.
I can't tell you how many people like, so is Most Precious Blood playing? The last time we played there didn't end so well.
Yeah. Oh, all I right. mean, it ended great. Just maybe yeah. not what they were looking for.
No.
Okay, so I just Googled Furnace Fest 2020. All right, it looks like I see Beloved, Boy Sets Fire, August Burns Red, Shai Hulud, Hope's Fall, Haste, Few Left Standing, Further Seems Forever, Life in Your Way, The Beautiful Mistake, With Honor, 68, Living Sacrifice. Is that your band, Pat?
It yeah. is.
Oh, boy. Misery Signals and Zao.
I mean, for that kind of, for the crowd that is hoping to draw.
That's a banger lineup.
There's some bands on there that draw. Like August yeah. Burns Red is like shockingly popular.
Oh, yeah. Really big. Really, really big.
But also, I mean, Misery Signals, really popular. First Seems Forever. Popular as fuck. You know, so I mean, they'll come through with like a fucking No Innocent Victim or one of those like really big Christian bands. I bet. I don't know. Like back in the day, it was written, run by Tooth and Nail.
Yeah, but Bob, when does it say this is taking place?
August.
Yeah, that's what it does.
You want to hear something insane?
September 18th and 20th through 20th, 2020.
I'll probably be touring, but I would fucking go.
That's what I was going to ask you if you would go. Okay. And Evergreen Terrace. I don't know if I said them, but yeah.
No, you didn't.
Here's a weird phenomenon, and maybe you guys could help me psychoanalyze if you would. So some of these bands are actual. I like these bands. Like the first three Zao records, I think are fucking awesome. I'm trying to think of what else you said that I think is Living Sacrifice. Yeah. Fucking at least two good, really good records. Now does that mean I want to see metalcore played by like maybe guys who haven't been keeping up, maybe aren't in the right physical condition to do that?
You think they're on the treadmill right now?
If they were smart at all, they'd be on the treadmill. It might be a disaster. It's running on nostalgia, and that's always a risk. But for some reason, I find this more of a fun lark than if I was going to see maybe some of the more traditional hardcore bands that I would go to see. And I don't know why that is exactly, because I should make it really clear. I have respect for some of these acts and enjoy them. So there's no real difference, but for whatever reason, there is a bit of a difference. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I would go to this in the same way that some people are psyched on emo night. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not my energy. I usually hate nostalgia.
That's what I was going to say, is it's going full nostalgia. Like, whatever they do from here is so interesting to me, because like, does it even matter if they put more modern or more relevant bands on, like, or do they just lean all the way in? And like, because you're right, this is essentially the equivalent of metalcore night, you know, like metalcore weekend. Like now that's what I call metalcore 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 20th anniversary one-off. So I'm like, does it make sense to bring fucking restraining order? Probably not.
No, or yeah, or like, you know, the biggest, like, Sanction. Like, are there people who are playing, who are going to this, who could be exposed to something like that? Sure. But are they the right people for it to matter? I don't know, you know, or would it be terrible? Would it be like awful for a band who's new to have to open that show? I don't know.
Right.
I think that this, I got to imagine that this is going to be like a true high school reunion for some people.
Oh yeah.
And Tom, this is in Alabama. Is that correct?
In Birmingham. Yes. and the squat furnaces.
Yeah, you're going. Yeah.
I love Birmingham. I would go just to hang out for a week.
Well, there you go.
So okay, maybe everybody will see me at fucking Furnace Fest.
We'd like to play.
Oh, fucking for sure.
Well, this is where you have your opportunity to do your crazy metalcore band. I don't know why you're not doing it. This is you have a window now of like 2 months to get it together and go full what's the label you're always talking about? Whatever. Go full
fucking Tribunal.
Tribunal on this thing, yeah.
I really don't want to be on Tribunal. Yeah, it is time for my insane metalcore band. It's just the problem is how do you make it how do you make things more insane than kids have already made things? I saw CU Space Cowboy the other day, right?
Yeah.
And like,
you actually went to a show?
Thank you.
I did.
Yeah, I know. I was so surprised too.
Do you know what got me? They tweeted at me and I was home. So I had no excuse. I was like, oh, well, I gotta go now. And it was fun. It's really like kind of a throwback for me in some ways, because it was at the Fuse Box, which used to be the QE2, which I've been to plenty of times since. But when it's kind of like the music, it's when it's a very similar music to the music that I used to see there as a kid.
Yeah,
it's a total fucking mind fuck. So, CU Space Cowboy, totally fascinating band that we should talk about in greater depth at some point, because I met some of the kids, cool dudes. I didn't get to pick their brain on this. I don't know if they know that they are making a very strange 2000s stew that like, so here's my question, and none of you guys can answer it, but you could take a guess. To somebody who is 25 right now, is that era that band is borrowing from, which to my ear is Converge, is Zayo, is like some of the Tribunal acts, maybe a tiny bit of Prayer for Cleansing sort of stuff.
Does it bang or is it lame?
No, not that. Not that. No, not that. But does it also has this kind of Blood Brothers aesthetic that was never associated with the style of music that they're playing?
100%.
Now, what? That's a fascinating mix to me, where that's like playing Twee and using crust imagery.
So you're saying like sass and presentation, but mosh and
ecstasy? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And but it's all of it has a bit of a throw, like to my ear and eye, have precedence. It's not like it's like a new sassy and a new mosh. It's like these are pulling from things that are very highly recognizable to me, right? And it's so fascinating that, like, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think that sometimes eras just become one thing to people? Like, okay, Rolling Stones and the Beatles, to my ear, are completely different. I don't even think about them in the same way.
Yes.
But I'm probably in some ways in a minority there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I bet many people put those things together sonically, even though sonically, I think that's where they're most different.
It's the trick, it's the trick of time, man. It's the trick of time. And it's the hard part as someone.
That's the new Zelda.
Yeah, it's the trick of time. No more ocarinas. So it's the idea that things in 1998 that seemed like they were 4,000 miles apart to someone in 2019, 2020, 2018, 20 years later are like, yeah, like this and this. And you're like, wait, no, those aren't the same thing. But who's wrong? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, wait, were you just too deeply invested in like not seeing that you were parsing grains of sand, or is the person now trying to equate false, you know, things that are very different?
Yo, the kid that was listening to Insect Warfare wanted nothing to do with Converge in 2020. Same kid.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, so right. Yeah, I think on some level, it was worthless, like tribal parsing at the time.
Yep.
And kudos to the kids that can, that don't have those barriers. So in some ways,
what's interesting is that they're taking these things and bleeding them all over each other and going, see, I made a new thing with these old things. And the only real difference was that, you know, you guys built the fence between them.
Yeah, I found it fascinating. Also, they put on a good show, so shout out to them. But I don't know how we arrived there. Throwback stuff
Furnace Fest.
Yeah, Furnace Fest. CU Space Cowboy sanction. There's certain acts that the current acts that would do like quote unquote do great, but that's on paper. Reality, no. You know what I mean? Reality, don't bother.
Quick question. When was the last time you went to a show at the Fuse Box, QE2, that you were not playing before last week?
Oh, must be 5 years or more for sure. Because I played there maybe a year or two ago, but show that I just went to, could be more than 5 years. That could be long time.
Okay. Second question here from this guy. Very different. Motion sickness, not a band. Curious if anyone has secrets for dealing with motion sickness on bus, train, public transit, or travel anxiety. Since y'all are experts, any cheat codes? Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Okay. So I travel with people that I don't suffer this, but I'm in bands with people that do. Don't bother trying to read. You know right. What I mean, it's like poor fucking Mary in Self-Defense. Literate woman can't enjoy shit on tour. she'll just start throwing up. I would say do the stuff that everybody would advise you to do, which is the second that you start to feel unwell, you pick a fixed point on the horizon and you don't deviate your eyes from it until your stomach calms itself. That's just like seafaring shit, I guess. I would urge you, a lot of motion sickness, my understanding is, comes from your visual experience. So, focus there first. It's unlikely that you're getting motion sick exclusively because of the motion. Just train the thing that you have control over, which is your eyes.
Yeah, that's good. Work on non-motion in your line of sight. Let's do one more and wrap it up. We've been running for a minute, and we'll make this an easy one to close the year. Let's see. Okay, this is a nice question. And if I read this before, please excuse me. Dan asks, if you could erase the vocals off an album or particular band's discography, who would it be? And who would you replace them with? He gives a couple examples. He gives a couple examples, so I'll read this. I'd go with Smashing Pumpkins. Imagine Siamese Dreams with Walter Schreifels on vocals. That'd be amazing. Hot take, Age of Quarrel. John Joseph's the weakest part of the album by far. Replace him with Ray Capo, and you've got one of the most perfect records of all time.
I think we just hit one of the most insane comments of all time. Go on.
Well, and then, so while you guys think, I'll finish. He said last week, episode, Bob, and he's going to show you, this is a little old, not that old, though. Bob mentioned something about doing the podcast. People know stuff about you without actually knowing you. Maybe think of the previous weekend when I was in town to see 108. During the weekend, I met up with Rich Miles, first time ever. A2G's Building Friendships. Shout out, Dan. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
And he invited Pat to grab food with us. As we were walking and I was having a conversation with Pat, I realized that if he was talking and I wasn't looking directly at him, it was like I was listening to the podcast. Kind of weird. Kind of weird, but whatever. Super nice dude. And as I replied to him, great question, Pat is a super nice dude. Just don't go telling people on the internet that. He has a reputation to uphold.
Fact.
So, okay. Vocal Deal Breakers was the title of this email, which is great and almost like episode worthy. But let's start here with the nut.
Hold on. Let me cut one of you off. Is one of you scratching a record right now? Is one of you DJing?
It sounds like a beard.
Okay.
Like up here to get the microphone.
What do you do me a favor? Pay attention. I think my editing task is going to be really hard after you hearing some of the scratch thing.
I don't have a beard.
Oh, there it is. Can we ID it? Hold on, everybody. I might keep this part in for.
I'm going to mute myself
for the action. Okay.
I'm going to mute.
Okay, so Bob, do me a favor. Talk. I want to see if you
can you hear me. What's going on?
Tom's definitely guilty.
Oh.
I'm nowhere near the microphone.
It might just be your mic. You're talking. You're the poor bastard that's speaking into like a little fake ass mic, right?
No, I don't even have a mic. I'm talking into my iMac directly.
Oh God! Oh God! All right.
Honestly, Tom, for it, you sound really good. I'm using a USB mic that I stole from Patrick, who stole it from Andrew, and it's like okay, I guess.
I mean, my mic is literally on the backside of the monitor, so there's no way I'm touching it.
All right. Well, I'm just going to edit what I edit, guys. Let's think about
it.
Fuck it.
Vocal deal breaker. Is there a record, if you could erase the vocals off an album or an entire band's discography, who would it be?
I'm looking through my records right now to see – through my MP3s right now to see if there's something that jumps out. But I think the reality is that because I'm a vocalist, it's such a breaking point for me that I don't know if anything with bad vocals stays. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I just delete it if I don't like the vocals. So I'm finding it a little hard to find an answer to this. Do you guys have one that jumps out at you?
Do we go Ray Capo over Tommy Carroll?
You know, Tommy Carroll, I would say, is not as good a vocalist, but he's got so much personality in there. It's hard for me. I would still keep it. There's a lot of people who would say take Ray Capo off those records. A lot of people can't stand that.
A lot of people.
You put Don Brannon in Youth of Today.
Oof, oof, oof. Wow.
I would like it a million times more. Hold on. Bob, what you just said, we've talked about a little bit, but can you guys speak to the fact, maybe for our younger listeners, how in and out of vogue Ray's voice goes? Like, there's
it goes from,
years
yeah, it
where
goes
people
from being aped for like several years where it's like, that is it. And not just that people like it and people enjoy it and espouse it, but that people are trying to do it. And then, you know, fast forward 8 months and everybody wants to be as far as possible away from it.
And it's so like it's distinct, so it's always going to have that effect to some degree. But him in particular, like the years that kids hate it, they really fucking hate it. It's really intense.
Okay, so I've got one: the Cramps.
Oh, that's not wrong.
I don't know who I would replace it with, but man, I mean. I don't know what I would replace it with. I'd have to think about it. But if you just gave me something a little more interesting, you know what? Crass, the vocals on some of the Crass stuff really get me. And if you give me somebody who's more ripping, if you give me the dude from Extreme Noise Terror singing on Crass, I'd be pretty amped on that. All right. I think that's a wrap. Let's call it on this one.
All right. Be good, everybody.
Do it to it.